Okay, let's take your phone calls and your stories on reincarnation with Paul Von Ward next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to take your calls this hour now with Paul Von Ward. Paul, how should someone start his or her own past life journey for self-discovery? What do we do?
Well, I think the first step is to do this sort of self-analysis. Look at what seems to be your basic characteristics and so on, according to the model that we've been talking about. And I mentioned on the website there is a notebook available that people can use to do that. Also, though, people have other starting points. Some could be dreams that seem to have a historical past life context and details. That's one way to start. Another is a sense of affinity. I have a number of cases where people have either felt themselves a connection to some previous lifetime, or they have been told by family members or others that, you know, you remind me of this. This, when I see you or hear you or see what you're doing, I have a sense of this. So that's a clue. There are people who have emotional experiences that I mentioned earlier. A lot of people go to a psychic and say, you know, tell me about my past lives, and they get a hint. Other people have experienced this through therapy, where they accidentally fell upon some feelings of a previous lifetime that seemed to be relevant to some problem they had in this lifetime. Other people go for simply past life regression sessions to search for their past lives. All of these are subjective ways of looking for information, and we need to be careful about, you know, how we handle it. It can provide clues that are actionable. They do need to be corroborated in terms of all of the real-world factors that I talked about earlier on. One of the things we need to keep in mind about regression therapy are more specifically just past life regressions. We know in other areas of medical research that the placebo effect works. It works in drugs. It works in surgery. There's such a thing as past life placebo as well. In other words, we think we've got a problem and we're going to get regressed and solve that problem, and we get a memory and it seems to solve the problem. We feel better about ourselves, but it may not be a true identification. Mm-hmm. And so what we suggest is that use any kind of clue that you have. I get email messages all the time, a person telling me, well, I was in a such and such a place and I had this experience. This seems to be a clue for me, and should I follow up on it? And other people relate some other incident. And so what we suggest is that these are all clues, and they may or may not be valid. And in most cases, when they're spontaneous and unprogrammed, they are likely to be more valid, but then to get into the process of self-discovery, because it doesn't have meaning until you really begin to consider the implications of a possible past life and its effect on you today.
Okay, Paul, let's go to the phones. You ready?
Sure.
Santa Rosa, California. Sid, get us started. Go ahead, Sid.
Yeah, hi. I had an experience where I had an OBE, and coming back from the OBE, I carried brand new memories, but not of a past life, but of my life, but not the same life that I'm living right now. In other words, there were different events and different things that happened, but I remembered them very, very clearly, and the way it struck me was that somehow I thought that I had run into, you know, a buffer or pattern of information that just kind of layered on top of the information I already had. But it was very, you know, I don't know how to say it, except it was very lucid and very clear, and came with a whole host of memories about family and events, and very, very rich in detail. And so it made me think, so what is that reincarnation, or is this information that I'm integrating, which, because certainly it's not reincarnation because it's my same life.
But an alternative experience of this same life?
Is that
the sense that you had?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the things that we talked about earlier when we were talking about alternative explanations for some of the material that we use in reincarnation research as evidence for reincarnation. And I have to admit that we don't really know whether you picked up on someone else's experiences, some other situation, or whether you were picking up on something that belongs to you as an individual. And it's very hard to know, and that's why I think that the process of corroboration through looking at one's own life and own details of this life. Now, you seem to have done that in the sense that you said, well, this is not something that I have lived. It appears to be something that I might have lived. Is that a correct...
I mean, for instance, when I came back with this experience, I remembered events of going to my brother's house and a holiday party, and I remembered, you know, after dinner, picking up a certain book and going through the pages and remembering what was, you know, what were on the pages relating to experiences that had happened in the past relating to that book. It had never happened, but it could have happened, and I was able to make to distinguish between that wasn't my life, but it was just a step away from being a memory that could easily have just been an actual memory.
Right. I remember in one of my first psychology courses in graduate school, the professor demonstrated that phenomenon to us by creating false memories in his children. I thought that was unethical at the time, but he invited the students to his house for a birthday party and then demonstrated to us what he had told us in class would happen, which is the kids were remembering birthday parties that they never had. And so there's something very fungible about memories and about the creation of memories. And I don't think we understand that very much. And we can speculate, you know, is it a parallel universe? And some people, you know, go there as an explanation. I happen to think it's something very similar to what happens in the dream process, that we rewrite the script in several different ways.
By the way, Paul, let me get this in. Apparently a car bomb at the U.S. Embassy in Yemen, and they say many casualties. That's all we know. Go ahead, Paul.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, could I just say something on that?
Sure.
When the embassy was bombed in 1998 in Kenya, I was in Seattle, Washington. I woke up in the middle of the night with a dream of an invasion into an embassy somewhere in West Africa by men on a plane from Yemen. And I told the participants at a conference that I was going to the next morning about this dream, and the radio announcement came on that this had happened. So we pick up on things like that. It so happens that the senior American who died in the Kenyan embassy bombing was a colleague of mine when I was in the diplomatic service in the Dominican Republic. So we are tied together on those things. And it was announced later on that someone from Yemen was a part of that Kenyan attack. It's a little bit off target from what we're talking about, but it's not. It's an indication of how we pick up information, and it's distorted. And as the caller mentioned, it didn't seem to have happened to me that way, but something like that happened.
Let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Leo, hello, Leo. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good to talk to everybody.
Thanks.
Now, kind of bear with me a little bit. There's a religion out there, I don't know which one it was right off the top of my head, that's supposed to be like 144,000 souls going to heaven.
That's the Christian religion.
Oh, okay. Now, if everybody had a past life, okay, and multiple past lives, now, would that divide into 144,000?
No, I think what you're referring to is there is a movement among numbers of groups of people who have the notion that at this particular time on the planet, that there are 144,000 people who have had past lives in a period in history, maybe related to the period of Jesus's lifetime or at other times, and that they are to be involved in some sort of social movement on the planet here.
Or taken, I guess, right?
Well,
isn't that the number, the taken number?
Yeah, one of the variations on that theme is that those are the ones who have been selected.
Right.
And
right. You know, there's everybody that, you know, had past lives, that would narrow down the numbers considerable, you know, in you know, worldwide numbers, you know.
It's not a lot of people when you consider it, is it?
Well, you mean the 144,000?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. My own belief is that if reincarnation is a natural process, is a real process, then everybody is involved in it, and that all of us have had varying degrees of past lifetimes. I think some more than others. We've had different experiences, so we've had different legacies that came forward, but I think it involves all humans, and I think that is entirely separate from this notion of a select 144,000.
Yeah, they are the very righteous ones, apparently, who are going to get handpicked.
Self-identified as such, I would say.
Steve in Newark, Delaware, you're on the air. Hey, Steve, go ahead.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Okay, well, I want to know what you, how you doing, first of all? My name's Rick, and my name's Steve, and I'm from Newark, Delaware. I want to know what you think about my opinion. I believe that the universe is made up of positive and negative energy, first of all. And either it be good or bad, you know, that we are controlled by or choose to be controlled by or, you know, energized by mostly through our life here. You know, even though we can choose to be on a positive basis or a negative basis, either, you know, by unseen forces, either positive or negative, or, you know, products of our environment, we choose to function negatively. I believe that when we pass through this dimension after our period of time is done here, I do not believe that there's any penalty for what we choose. I can be an axe murderer or I can be a saint. I believe when I pass on, I simply had a role to play on this during this dimension, and I will not be penalized for that, because the universe is basically made up of positive and negative energy. And if we didn't have our roles to play and there was a certain amount of negative and a certain amount of positive, the universe wouldn't be balanced, I believe. So I believe you do have to have both in order for the recipe of the universe to exist. So I do not feel that you would be held responsible for what you choose to be, either if you're controlled or you choose, which to a point, there's unseen forces that could probably make you this way. And I also feel that, for instance, that people that do not have self-esteem or a real force of positivity on this earth,
they're negative, negative.
I believe if they are not, you know, well-based, even though they might be a good person, I believe that if they go to sleep and they have an out-of-body experience, I believe that if you're not, you know, have a good foundation and you're positive, even though you might not be bad, I mean, you know, if you go to sleep and have an out-of-body experience, these are the people that all of a sudden go in McDonald's and shoot the place up because they never got a chance to enter their body again because the negative forces
took over,
and they never actually got back into her body. And that's why that if you look at these people that go off, they would never think that this person would do something like that in most cases.
What do you think of that theory, Paul?
Well, you've covered a good bit of ground there. Let me just say first, I think that you're right in that the universe is composed of positive and negative. It's the old traditional concept of the yin-yang, the passive, the active. And it's the dialectic, the exchange back and forth that makes everything possible. So a lot of the things that we call evil or good or bad in a social definition today can be looked at in a different way when you look at it from this universal point of view. So I certainly agree with you on that score. But my whole thesis in this reincarnation research, and it seems to me that this is where the evidence is pointing, is that sure, we can choose to be more, I don't like to use the word positive and negative. I like to use the words constructive and destructive.
Well, what about good evil?
Well, I don't like to use good evil either, because that has such a connotation that I like to use the terms construction and destruction, or because it's either building up or tearing down. So what I would say is that if we choose to be more constructive or less constructive, I do not agree with your view that there's no consequence of this. The whole notion of reincarnation is that there are consequences. In other words, what we do in this particular lifetime creates our own personality, which is going to receive to some extent what it gives out, what it puts out. And in the return in the next lifetime, there's not going to be the kind of positive growth and development, so that you, if you've chosen this time to use a more destructive path, you're going to suffer the consequences, if it's not in this lifetime, in the experiences of the next lifetime. So I don't think there's, you know, some magic judge saying yes penalty, no penalty, but I think the natural consequences of our behaviors are certainly a part of this whole phenomenon of reincarnation. Your point on the OB experience resulting in violence
and possession,
because the soul is
possession,
gone,
basically.
That's a total other concept. That's spirit possession of a body when the soul has gone out, and that's outside of the realm of our research at this point.
Paul, we're coming up to the break again. Always good to get your word out on your website and what you recommend people to do and where they go with regards to the reincarnation experiment.
Okay, go to the website, which is just www.reincarnationexperiment.org, and it invites people to participate. There's a way to give us a communication about your own case, some questions you have about exploring your own possible past lives. We can connect you with people in this network of folks who are cooperating on the experiment, whether you're interested in hypnosis, regression therapist, dream therapy, intuitive work, self-discovery. We're trying to use all of these different approaches, and we can make that connection for you.
Paul, I think you're on to something with the soul genome in that angle that you went after that not a lot of people have. And, you know, I think it's inherent in our system. It's almost like a trigger, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, this is, you know, I don't want to claim a great breakthrough or an innovation, because what I've done is sort of stand on the shoulders of other people like Ian Stevenson,
sure,
and others. But I do think I've put the pieces together in a sort of holistic, integral way that has not been done before.
Paul, let's take final questions when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, again, it'll be David Icke. We'll be back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We've got final calls now with Paul Von Ward. Paul, let's go to the calls. They're still lining up for you here. Robin in Oakland, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Robin.
Hi, George. Just 2 seconds to tell you, it's so hard to believe 6 years have gone by.
Fast.
It seems like it was art, and you have done a wonderful, wonderful job. And, Paul, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Bear with me here as I try to get this lined up. I was killed in Stalingrad as a Nazi soldier. And when I went home, I really didn't want to come back to planet Earth. And I was given the opportunity. I have a great affinity with my mother and my father. We've been through many, many, many lives together and a deep love. And they showed me what their lives would be like if I didn't reincarnate to help them make the crossing to die. And so at the last minute, I said, okay, I'll come. I'll do it. And I did, and it was fortunate that I did. I was the only one there when both of them died, particularly my mom with Alzheimer's for a long time. But what I wanted to mention was that I didn't go through what I call the eraser machine, where your past lives are erased. And that gentleman who called, believe me, everything that you do to anybody or anything else, you will feel when you do have your life review. So don't think that anything that you do, you get you walk away from. But what I wanted to mention is that I remember most, if not all, of my past lives. And what I noted is that it's those that have violent deaths that seem to be most resonant. Is that something that you find in the work that you do?
Well, we find a lot of people with violent deaths. In fact, I think that if you look at the population of reincarnation cases that various researchers are working with, there is a larger percentage of those cases that involves violent deaths than you have in terms of violent deaths in the population as a whole.
Right.
So that would suggest to me that, what you've said is, in fact, the case. And it probably has to do with, you know, the energetics involved here. One of the things we started learning from Freud, you know, 100 years ago, is that the emotional energy from traumatic experiences is something that is a coherent field of energy that lives and acts on us within this lifetime. That was the psychoanalytic view, but I would extrapolate that and say it also acts from lifetime to lifetime. So I think what you're saying is you know, logical and consistent with the data that we have today.
When I was a samurai warrior and suicide, you know, or, you know, falling on your own sword, that kind of thing was quite predominant. I kept having to come back again and back again and back again because I was committing suicide. And I remember that my final two lives that I lived in Japan were those of a monk. Mm-hmm. And to come to resolution and to clear away that. And believe me, there is nothing on earth that would ever make me commit suicide.
Well, what I advise people, given what we, I think, are learning about the process, and it's, you know, as I think as you've sort of described it, is that if you have these problems in this lifetime, if you have these destructive tendencies in this lifetime, that it's much better to think about resolving them in this lifetime before you have to do it again.
Oh, yes.
And so I'm very much, I think the data that we have is compatible with your experience. I really appreciate your sharing that.
And I thank you so much for your wonderful work, and I'll look forward to seeing your website.
Thanks so much.
There you go, Wildcard Line. Kevin in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hey, Kev.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I have had a couple different experiences. One of deja vu when I was in the Navy in Rome. We were with a tour group and walking along one of the sides of the Colosseum. I was walking along and I just all of a sudden froze. It was like that road, the tree that was on the road, all of those things just made me stop in mid-stride. And I got that sense of being there before. And the other thing that struck me, I was reading a book here recently about Civil War, historical Civil War sites, and battlefields and that kind of thing. And in the book, he described Robert E. Lee after the war. He died about 5 years after the war of a stroke, and he lingered for several days. The author didn't describe the death of Robert E. Lee in great detail on that, but when I was reading that, I kind of got a picture of not necessarily being there for the death of Robert E. Lee, but more a picture of being there when he was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tie that in to this. When you brought up the Yemen bombing just now, it flashed me back to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that kept going through my head in 9/11 was not the actual planes crashing into the World Trade Center, but the pictures that were in my head were of these people getting on the plane. It was another ordinary day, et cetera, et cetera. And I tend to believe in reincarnation, but I also tend to wonder how much transference we give to that. And that's why I bring up the thing with 9/11, because obviously I was here on Earth then.
Mm-hmm.
But I really get the sense, when I think about it, not of the crashes themselves, but of the moments before the hijackers even took over the plane, where it was just another ordinary day.
Right.
So do you understand kind of what I'm saying about the...
Yeah.
I worry about the transference and what you were just talking about with Freud. How do you relate all that, and is there any way to take what might be transference of on my part or anybody's part, wishing to have been at an event
right.
in the past, as opposed to something really that you may have been there at?
Yeah, this is one of the real issues that we've touched on two or three times in the show. The problem of differentiating between our own memories and our own experiences as an integral being. Now, one of the principles of the model that we're working with here is that each of us are integral beings that transcend space and time. But being integral beings, self-sufficient to ourselves to a certain extent, does not eliminate our interaction in what we're calling in physics today the in non-locality and entanglement phenomenon at the quantum level, so that we are, in fact, also at the same time we are experiencing our own experience from our perspective, we're picking up on and interacting with a total field of consciousness. And I think that when we start talking about reincarnation, we have to realize that we don't really know where that border lies between self and other. And what I'm trying to do in this model and the research that we're pursuing is to pare it down to memories, to personality traits, to physical features that we can actually measure in some way. That you and I could talk about the measurement so that we could agree that we're measuring something tangible, whether it's a personality trait or a physical feature, and then sort of attempt to say the likelihood of all of this package being just picking up pieces from different other people's experiences doesn't make sense, that it makes more sense to see it as a total coherent package of energy and information in the soul genome. So, I mean, you're right on the real issue here, and I don't think we have an answer, but the way you've articulated it is the dilemma that we have in this research, and I really appreciate your pointing it out that clearly.
Paul, Jim Tucker was with us, I think, about 3 years ago. Is he still at the University of Virginia?
Yes, he's still there doing the same work. We're in communication on a regular basis. They are, in fact, we're going to have a meeting in the next few weeks. They're evolving in their research, and I'm evolving in my research, and other people are picking up on it. So I think what we have here is a little bit of a movement towards what I would call a scientific approach to reincarnation that has not existed before. And I'm feeling very, very, very pleased, you know, that some people are beginning to come together and share ideas. None of us have the whole picture. And what's required here is some collaboration and cooperation, and that's what we're involved in.
Well, let's go to Andrew in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yes, good day.
Yeah.
Good day to you both.
Thank you.
I just wanted to pass on a experience that I had as I was a young boy, as well as you, George. When I was about 10 or 11 years old, I remember going to a play or production of a play called Cabaret. And when I was there watching the play with my family, obviously, with my mom and my pop, I experienced at the intermission, there was a broadcast or they played a live feed or a live recording of Hitler. I remembered experiencing a tightness in my chest and a quiet unsteadiness. During that, I obviously didn't know it was a live recording of Hitler at the time. I was just a little boy. I didn't know what was going on. But I got very nervous. I got very scared. And I walked out of the building that I was in, and I started to cry. And I was beside the building, and I was just crying. And I was like, I didn't understand what's going on. And, you know, I told myself to center and to balance and worked on looking at the experience from an outside perspective and realized that the reason why my energy was so frantic was because I had experienced a past life at that time, and I had experienced being under the regime of Hitler, and that it was very traumatic for me. I then, after those days had passed, I went to a psychic and that specialized in past life regression or past lives, and requested information on it, and they reaffirmed all the information that I had felt and that I experienced. From that point forward, I have experienced throughout the growth of my life many different past life experiences. It's almost like that one experience, that one sound, that one thing that I heard triggered my ability to look back upon my own creation, my own lives, and access them as I grew older. And it seemed as if that each person, not necessarily specifically, but each person I had a very, very close, intimate connection with, shared sometimes with me in previous lifetimes, and I've remembered many, many different lifetimes from that point forward. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of wondering if there's any way I could help. I've been very interested in the field for a very long time, and wondered if there was any opportunities out there to be an assistance.
Well,
with the programs that you do.
Yeah, you should go to our website and give us an email and refer to this experience. We're just a loose network of people, therapists and researchers and other psychologists who are interested in this phenomenon, and we certainly welcome not only cases, but we really welcome people who are interested in helping other people on their own cases. The phenomenon that you've described for yourself is a common one. Once you open yourself to memories of one past life, it does seem that this allows greater opening to previous past lives. And then what's important and interesting about that is then you can see the kinds of patterns that I've been talking about over the course of the show. You can see that in these different lifetimes and their various iterations and variations depending on circumstances, of course. But what you can see is the trajectory of a soul on a journey that is moving and is developing in a certain way. So I would say that when we are young children born with this past life legacy, we are as different among ourselves as adults are at age 50. And this is one of the things that parents and teachers and our whole society is going to have to come to terms with if this theory is validated with more and more research, is that we are, as little children, an inherent set of predispositions based on this legacy of many lifetimes that is in need of support
and understanding as we evolve in this lifetime.
Let's see
so
if we
you're
can
a good example of that.
Grab one or two more. First timer, Dave, go ahead.
Yes, I've done some, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Done some past life regression work, and I have to admit this is probably some of the most objective and lucid material I've ever heard. I do want to point out from my perspective that doing past lives and reincarnation itself, number one, is a misnomer. The lives, as I came through it and did these regressions, I realized these things are happening concurrently, number one. And as far as validating them and proving that I was this person and going back and looking for tombstones, I found that that was probably not likely, as a lot of people are very logical and scientific. It's gonna betray them because these lifetimes are being manufactured holographically, and there's a total disconnect. Thirdly, I find that reincarnation is one of many ways to evolve, and a lot of people get really, really hung up on the importance of who they were and what they did and the meaning and the karma and all this business, and I say, don't get fascinated by that. Because this is a play being created by your higher self. All these lifetimes are hanging out there like cars in the garage. If no matter what car you get into, it changes your driving experience. And the important thing is we're here to refine certain things. We're here to get into alignment with the divine higher dimensions by refining our taste, refining our emotions, our choices, refining our minds. And so I think people get a little bit lost and hung up in the excitement and the drama and all the nitty-gritty of the past life. And sometimes they overlook what's the evolution about. The evolution is...
And what is the evolution about? Paul Von Gard, we are out of time, my friend. Do me a favor, say goodnight to the world, would you?
Good night to the world, George, and thank you very much for a wonderful show.
For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.